This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
2 more hours. 2 more hours for you to tire out your index finger, hitting that button to vote for Gene Segura and thereby violating what Jim believes is a fundamental tenet of one man, one vote. But
wait, no, you can't vote anymore.
Oh, really? Is the voting cut off?
The voting's
at 1
over
p.m.?
At 1 and they're announcing it at 5.
How many times did you vote for him?
Zero.
Same here.
Oh,
I got to say.
Come on.
I feel kind of bad.
Yeah.
But there's so many people around here that made up for it.
Why do you feel bad about that?
I guess I don't feel like if he does make the All-Star team that I have any pride in it.
Get out the vote, man. Didn't you listen to all the public service announcements? Yeah, heck yeah, I did.
How many times?
At least 30.
And how did it go? See, that's I'd be interested in hearing from someone via the text line if you want. Coors Light text line, 710-710. Like, how long does it take to do 50 votes or 100 votes? And how many people out there voted 1,000 times or 500 times? I'm just curious.
So,
like Liddy Cruz here, host of The Blitz, she sounds like she spent the whole day just tapping, I think.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I know she did her show this morning.
Showing some devotion, dedication. So you want to hear from someone who voted multiple times.
Yeah, what's our number?
206-421-3776.
Shouldn't we know that by now?
Jim Moore would like to hear from someone who voted to send Segura. We're going to talk to another person who helped send Segura. Hopefully send Segura. We'll find out for sure at 5 o'clock. Mitch Haniger is going to be joining us here. That's coming up within the next 10 minutes or so. He's going to call in from Anaheim. Disappointing loss yesterday. I think there's a lot of reasons not to get too carried away, though, when it comes to the conclusions you draw from that. But Gene Segura, I think it's awesome that people have had the enthusiasm and energy around voting for Segura. We've talked a long time about sort of the level of fan interest and what's it going to take for people to get involved, get committed to the team, and to not be sort of soured by the previous 15 or so years of history. And I think we're seeing it, that people are caught up in it, and I think it's awesome.
Well, and based on the vote, at least what we heard, the last number. So voting's closed. We're going to find out what? And you say at 4 o'clock?
At 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. So, yeah, we'll see. One thing for sure, though, the Mariners PR department did an unbelievable job of putting that out there and then also getting I guess they made the T-shirts and everything. So, yeah, it's a huge deal. And I think it is a sign that, you know, all these people that were afraid to jump in with the Mariners are jumping in. So, yeah, you see a lot of devotion. I just think it sort of helps define how much people have embraced this team and how much they've come out that they're willing. And also maybe hear from people that are like Jim and think that it's a waste of time, that you shouldn't be voting for Gene Segura.
No,
is that, am I portraying your feelings or is that?
Well, not to rain on the parade here, but it's interesting though. There's a lot of people that are texting in. I voted over 100 times. It took about 3 seconds for each vote, probably close to 120 times or more. I voted 50 times. It took about 5 minutes. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I'm just the old burned out guy, get off my lawn guy. And I'm just like, you know, what happened to those days of the polls? Because I think there should be.
When you didn't vote?
Well, no,
days at the polls, is that what we're talking about?
When everybody had one vote. So you had one vote.
How many votes?
And shouldn't it be based a little bit? And again, I know I'm going against the grain here with hashtag send Segura. But shouldn't it be based also, who are the other three guys? Are there four or five guys?
Five guys total.
Five guys. Shouldn't it be based, like, you know, get some seamhead guys that are chiming in on which one is most deserving out of those five. Now, you can build a great case for Segura that way, too. I'm just saying, you know, Eddie Rosario, Andrelton Simmons, and who are the other ones?
Giancarlo Stanton. And then you have Benintendi from Boston.
Benintendi. So you put them all together, and you wouldn't it be kind of fun to talk to some people and measure those five guys and see which one, you know, one through five should actually be there, as opposed to, you know, this just cramming a bunch of ballots into a box.
I like the cramming a bunch of ballots into a box.
Okay, well, this is I just thought I would have a countering point on that.
Let's go to Colleen here in Richland. Colleen, how are you doing?
Hi. I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. How many times did you vote?
Oh, a lot. I can't even tell you. I wore my finger out morning, noon, and night. And it was pretty easy to get in there and vote yesterday and last night and a little bit this morning. And then all of a sudden, it just crashed. You could not go in there and vote.
Sen Segura broke the voting machine.
He did. And they were talking about it on ESPN radio that it was down because there were so many people that were going to Safeco Field and trying to get on, that they crashed the system. But I kept the trying until I could get back on, and then I just continued until it was time. You couldn't do it anymore. And I believe that he's just got to win. He deserves it.
All right. Let's see. Colleen, thank you very much. I want to keep Colleen on because do you have anything to say to her, Mr. Sourpuss? Here's Colleen, who was logged on at least three different times.
Are you enjoying this?
About, a little bit.
Are you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Why, just putting me with the black hat on over
no,
here?
I think it's kind of interesting. I want to hear like your voice of cynicism to come face to face and melt in the face of Colleen's graciousness.
Okay. Colleen.
Like, listen to how nice and sweet she is.
Colleen, I love the Mariners too, and I've been watching since 1977, but you know, I was out with River on a trail today. I was running errands. I was doing different things, and I honestly didn't have time to vote for Gene Segura. Is that okay? Because I want him to be there, but I just can't imagine. Somebody said he voted 4,000 times. The 425 voted 4,000 times.
Colleen's skeptical of that.
Right.
She's calling bull on that one.
I am, because that's a lot of going in back and forth with that code number. That you had to put in every time.
Yeah. Colleen, thank you very much. We appreciate
you,
Colleen.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
And we appreciate everything you've done to help send Segura. And we've got another person, and I think you're familiar with her, Darlene in Polesbowl.
Oh, Darlene.
Darlene, how are you?
I'm driving, so I couldn't text. But when I heard you guys had an opinion, I thought, oh, my goodness, I have to tell them. I voted for you, so you don't have to worry.
Oh, you voted for Jim?
I just voted for all the guys who might not be on there. See what I do? I put on the television show that I normally watch on MSNBC so I can keep up with the idiot in the White House. And then I just listen to that, and I put on the vote Segura thing. And it's so neat because you hit the repeat button. All you have to do is decipher those silly little numbers. But they keep fluffing up them in the top, and you can't read the 3 and the 5 sometimes. And so some of my votes didn't count. But I would listen 2 hours at a time, and then my finger would be tired, so I'd go do something else. Then I'd come back when I took a break, and I'd vote another hour and a half, and then another 30 minutes, and there's no way to count it. But what you're doing is you just type 5 little numbers and hit submit, and then it comes back up, you type 5 little numbers and hit submit. I bet that guy could have voted 4,000 if he voted many days, because I did.
Darlene, we love you. We thank you for calling.
You're so welcome, guys.
Thanks, Darlene. I love Darlene.
Now, see, don't you feel like a little bit like a Grinch, don't you? Like your heart's two sizes too small.
Here you are like, I don't have time because I'm out on the trails hiking around with River. I can't be bothered to vote to send Segura. And
no,
in fact, and everybody should only have one vote.
It's not just that. There's a little bit of Clayton in me, too, you know, because Clayton's the old-time reporter where he's got to be objective at all times. And so, and yeah, I kind of, as much as I want the Mariners to win and I enjoy the Mariners, I'm hoping that they make the playoffs and everything, there's still that old reporter in me, too, that's like, I don't want to be too much of a homer.
Oh, Jim's got his journalistic integrity hat on.
Dude.
There's a journalistic integrity.
Hat?
It's right there. It's got a thick layer of dust on it at this point.
Yeah.
At the break, I'll go and get that, and we'll put that on Jim's head.
Yeah, there's a little Ryan Divish in me. There's a little bit of that.
Oh, don't drag Divish into this.
Why? Because he covers he probably, in the back of his mind, would rather cover a winning team, but he would never tell you that.
Well, he is covering a winning team right now.
No, I know he is, but he would never tell you that.
Oh, see, he covers his enthusiasm with a thick layer of cynic, like a thick layer of...
Well, here's one thing. I don't think the journalistic integrity hat would fit on Divish.
That's definitely true. Like his
Should those rules change?
His fitted cap size is Jupiter. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, when you're going to, and he takes it off and he just puts it on the planet there. It is Danny Davenport. We are joined now, coming to us from Anaheim down there. They're preparing to take on the Los Angeles Angels. Mitch Haniger of the Mariners is with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. First things first, Mitch, congratulations on your All-Star selection.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Was it a nerve-wracking experience waiting to find out if you were chosen?
A little bit, but I was just trying not to think about it. I think for me that was the best way to approach it, is just if it happens, it happens. And, you know, I'm thankful that it did and that I made the team. And for me, I just tried to focus on, you know, preparing myself to play each day and helping the team win. And, you know, if I do those things well enough, hopefully I would make the team. And luckily I did.
Yeah, so Mitch, is that something that's like a goal of yours that you think about, you allow yourself to think about when the season starts? That, hey, you know, somebody asks you individually goals, what are they? Make the All-Star team.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my goals. That kind of after when I was hurt last year, I kind of in the middle of the summer was thinking about, you know, the competition in the big leagues and kind of where I fit in, where I see myself. And I was talking with our mental strength coach, and I told him, I said, I think I can be an MLB All-Star, and that's one of my goals, and I'm going to do everything possible to make that happen. And so it was kind of cool to see it happen this year, and hopefully a couple more times throughout my career.
Yeah, and Mitch, congratulations from all of us, man. We're really excited. Remember the day you came in and after the trade. But tell us a little bit about this thing with Gene Segura. It seems to me like, man, I saw the pictures of you guys all with the Gene Segura T-shirts on and everything. You guys got a really tight team. And just tell us about some of the fun that you're having and how much this thing with Segura is bringing you together.
Yeah, it's been really fun the past couple of days trying to get Gene voted in. I mean, the guy's so deserving, and it was unfortunate he didn't get in on the, you know, the first round, but we have opportunity now to get him in, and, you know, we're all having our fingers crossed and hoping for some good news later on today. Yeah, he's been one of our best hitters in our lineup, plays unbelievable defense, and it's been a really good, you know, addition to the team over the past 2 years. You know, me and him came in on the same day, and he's fit in really well, and just also such a great job from the city of Seattle and our marketing team putting together everything, you know, kind of making, you know, doing everything behind closed doors and getting all that going for him. It's awesome.
Yeah, we'll find out at 5 o'clock whether Gene Segura will be joining you in Washington, D.C. And Mitch, how'd you celebrate when you found out you made it in?
Nothing really. I mean, just found out in the team meeting, and you know, a lot of teammates come over and just say congratulations, and yeah, I told my wife, and then I got to see my wife and my mom after our game that Sunday, and just hung out with them. Nothing crazy.
Well, can you tell us about the conversation you had with your parents?
Yeah, so my wife was the one that broke the news to my parents. We found out kind of right before the game, and as soon as we found out, I had a whole bunch of stuff to get to do. So I let my wife know, and my mom was going to meet up with her at the game. So she told my mom, and then I got to, you know, see her after the game, and they're pretty. She was really excited, and my dad was really excited as well. And he found out from my mom, so he texted me, and then we spoke that night on the phone.
I'm sorry, Dan. I was going to ask a follow-up question. Are they going to come to the game? Everybody coming out? You got
yes,
plans to?
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
Well, man, they must be so proud.
Oh,
I
can
mean,
imagine.
Mitch, yeah, I mean, I'd be having tears, Mitch, if I were your dad.
Yeah, I haven't got to see him yet, but I'm sure he will get a little emotional, and you know, it's been a long road, but I've been very blessed for a lot of all these opportunities, and especially coming over to Seattle and being able to play every day and you know, show my worth to the organization and the guys in the clubhouse.
We're talking to Mitch Haniger here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Just a couple more questions. They're taking on the Angels tonight. Pre-game show is going to start here at 6 o'clock. First pitch at 7:07. Mitch, there's a lot of different skills you have that are awesome to watch. I've been really impressed kind of by your fearlessness this year, especially in foul territory and Safeco. And I know you ended up kind of getting a little bit banged up last week. You had a catch against the Tigers where you went into the stands. And afterwards, I tried to provide a bit of a public service announcement of, hey, guy in the green hat, next time that happens, let's try to catch our all-star right fielder so he doesn't sort of tumble into the stands and fall on it. Do you try to put the fence out of your mind when you're going over there to make the catch? Do you try to remain aware of it? How do you balance sort of the attempt to make an out with sort of preserving your health a little bit?
Yeah, I think now I need to do a little bit better job of that, just because if I'm not on the field, you know, I'm not very valuable to these guys and can't really help the team win. So, you know, I want to make every play I can, and I like playing reckless and you know, I'm not afraid to run into a wall or go into the stands, but at the same time, you have to make sure that it's not going to keep you out for a couple weeks, because when you're out on sitting on the DL and on the bench, you can't really help the team win, and that's the main goal. So, yeah, with that being said, just kind of pick and choose the right times and go in and try to just get a good judge of where the fence is. But it's different when you play at all these different ballparks as often as we do. It's a little more difficult to get a judge, but in Safeco, it's tough with the short wall that kind of then jets out. There's not much foul territory deep in down the right field line, so it's a difficult, really difficult wall to navigate. And a lot of us just kind of talked about that because it comes up on you quick and you can kind of swipe your knees out from under you. But yeah, just kind of doing your work in BP to get familiar with the wall and try to make every play you can, but also stay safe.
When you made that catch against the Tigers, and I'm not sure, it's probably been more than a month now, and not sure how well you remember it, but were you able to keep yourself from landing fully kind of on your back and head, or did you take the brunt of it on your upper body?
Yeah, it was all upper back, neck, and head.
Man.
Yeah, I didn't, that day, that night, I didn't feel too bad, but the next day, and for probably a week to two after, my neck was not feeling too hot. But it's been good now.
Were you mad at the guy in the green hat for not catching you?
No, it's tough to do as a fan because you're trying to judge where the ball is going to land. You don't want to get hit in the head with the ball, and at the same time, you don't want to get run over by the outfielder. But I like to say if you can be there and kind of provide a cushion and put your hands out for a guy, that's great. But at the same time, you know, you have to also watch out for yourself. And There's balls that we can't get to, and if you're focusing on the outfielder, you're going to get hit in the head with the ball. So I think it's a little bit more difficult than some people, you know, a lot of people are giving that guy a lot of grief, and it's a tough thing to do, to judge the wall, the player, and the ball at the same time, and that's essentially what I'm doing. And, you know, it's tough to make that play as well as get out of the way or provide like a landing for a guy.
Yeah, I got to imagine, like, the worst thing would be is if you interfere with the ball, right? And, you know, you'd rather...
That's if you're...
Go ahead.
Yeah, if you're a home fan, if we're in Planet Safeco and you're a Seattle fan and we're on defense, just don't try to catch the ball. Let us make the play. And then if we're on offense, feel free to knock the ball away.
Yeah.
And obviously not interfere over the fence, but if it's in foul territory and he... just trying to make a play, you know, we're not going to complain if you don't let him make that play.
Fans got every right to the ball at that point.
We got to get Mitch Haniger to make like a public statement, like
public service announcement
of how to handle that over there. That'd be awesome.
Now, hey, Mitch, you're a terrific hitter. We know that. 18 home runs, 65 runs batted in, the 3-run homer and the double last night. Terrific defensive player. There's one thing you need to work on, though. You know what that is?
What's that?
You don't like desserts. I can't for the life of me understand that because I'm just a Dairy Queen guy. I just, you know, anytime I see something sweet, I want to throw it in my mouth or shove it down the gullet. And yet I've never met anybody, Mitch, that doesn't like desserts until I met you.
Really? I've met some people that don't like desserts.
Really?
I'm getting a lot of grief from this from a lot of people. Actually,
are you?
I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal.
It's not grief. Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, no, partly is I know most of them are bad for me, so I stay away from it just because I know, you know, if you eat crappy foods all the time, it's not going to help your performance. And another part of me is just I like candy. I'll, you know, eat some candy every once in a while, and I like certain desserts, but for the most part, I like the chocolate, brownies, and stuff like that. Cake, I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, it's.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's a great thing. It would be there. And last thing for you here, Mitch, did you vote for Gene in the online balloting, the final vote?
Yeah, every day. Every morning, every night.
We're talking, we've got some people here texting in. They voted at least 450 times. One guy says he voted 4,000 times. It's been awesome to watch the enthusiasm around the team. And best of luck tonight against the Angels, Mitch.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mitch.
That is Mitch Haniger. He's such a wholesome dude that he just doesn't even like dessert. Like, yeah, that's the most controversial thing about him.
Yeah, that question did not go well.
Yeah, but, you know,
you just never know, though. You just throw stuff out there. Sometimes you get a home run with it, and sometimes you get a called strike three. That was a called strike three, probably.
No, I don't think – Mitch is very steady. You can't tell whether he's upset by something or happy about something, and I think that's the way you need to be as a baseball player. But I wish I was like him. If I hated desserts, that would be awesome.
You and Jim wouldn't have to talk about how you want to be knocked unconscious with a hammer each night at 9 p.m.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody would just hit me in the head and knock me out every night at about 7 o'clock. By the way, Jim and I are getting a lot of heat here, and one of the guys here called me the chubby linebacker. Jim and the chubby linebacker should be put in the corner, and somebody said that we should be ashamed of ourselves for not voting.
Really? Well, how about the 360, though? You see this? Simmons is worth the shortstop for the Angels. Simmons is worth a full win and a half over Segura because of his defense. And as much as I want to see Segura there, this multiple votes thing is just stupid.
See, that's going too far now.
Why do we need sound effects while I was reading what the 360 had to say?
You started talking about war and I dozed off.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes, wins above replacement.
So, well, and also, it's
like an automatic
reaction. You're promoting Andrelton Simmons, and we don't want to do that. That was a bummer last night, though. I mean, here he went out, and I know Segura was one for four last night, but Andrelton Simmons went 2 for 4, had some RBIs, made some defensive plays. And so, if you know, I'm sure down there they're supporting him and doing their own little campaign for him, but that was a good timing for him anyway.
They're not as tech savvy as we are. Here's my favorite text that's come in so far. From the 360. Don't say you didn't have time! ! That's a lie, Jim.
Yeah, who is that? 425?
It's the 360.
Oh, he's right. I did have time. I could have voted. I got something else to say before we go to break, too. The show record was giving me a hard time today, Bob Stelton in particular.
I have no idea why.
Well, because he says, oh, you'd be like Jim Moore, and you just throw things out there, and every once in a while you're going to hit one. You just say enough stupid stuff, and occasionally you're going to be right. Well, I've got one more for Stelton and everybody else. You know what's going to happen next year? This will be changed. This whole final vote thing will be changed, and there'll be maybe they'll give half because Segura is going to win in the landslide. I don't know if they're going to release the voting totals, but next year they're going to have something where it's 50% fans and probably 50% major league executives that are picking the final vote, guys.
Well, it is Danny, Dave, and Moore, and coming up next, you will continue to hear an old man yell at clouds.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
I think the Seahawks are going to be competitive for a playoff spot. Like, I really do, and I know we're still a couple weeks away from training camp, but we'll get back to the Mariners here. This came up last night. I had some friends over, and I found it more and more. People who are pretty devoted Seahawks fans, and it's my friend Jeff. He goes to a lot of events. He's got season tickets. And it's kind of this, how do you think they're going to be with a Wentz? Like, there's a sense of, it's not exactly fear, but there's a lot of uncertainty and a belief that it very well might get worse before it gets better for the team. And I bring that up of what your expectations are for this team. You can text in 710-710. I expect this team to win 9 to 10 games and compete for a wild card spot. I think the next most likely scenario is that they're just a tick below that, 7 to 8 wins, and are competitive and good. I think it's more likely that they win 11 games than they lose 11 games. And maybe I'm alone in that regard, but I think that this team is going to be more competitive. How do you feel about the prospects for this team?
I feel good. I feel a lot better since yesterday. So I was hanging out with Bobby Wagner all day. And so in between, you know, we're shooting this commercial for Acton's Roofing. We're kind of just talking and chatting about the season and everything. And all of a sudden he's like, so how do you think we're going to be this year? I was like, well, how do you think you're going to be? But the way he asked it was like, people are doubting us, right? And he kind of wanted to get a feel for that. And I was like, look, man, first of all, they got you. They got KJ Wright. They've got Pete Carroll. And they've got Russell Wilson. And the thing that came out of it, and of course, and look, you know, he thinks they're going to be a lot better than everybody thinks. But, you know, when you're a player, you totally lack objectivity because, you know, you're all in with your team. I always tell the story, 2-14 year, I thought we're going to the playoffs. And we were 2-14, so you always feel that way. But just the way he said it, a little bit of a hint of that chip on your shoulder thing. And I know that gets kind of corny at some point, but when you have teams doubting you, and I just feel like the more that wasn't there, there was some kind of a poll or some website where they had the Seahawks finishing last. You know, they're talking about the 49ers and the Arizona Cardinals finishing above them. Look, the Rams are going to be a really tough challenge, but just look at and the other thing is you just have to remember that every year on this team, and especially with Pete Carroll, Pete Carroll does really well with younger players. He was that way at USC. He wasn't afraid to start freshmen. And so, you know, I'm more optimistic than I am negative about this team. I know that there's a lot of question marks and there's some guys that need to step up, but that happens every year. And who's the best guy at developing them? Pete Carroll and his staff. I also think this, it's going to help this defense immensely, having Ken Norton Jr. back. They love him. They love him down there, and he was there with Bobby and KJ the first time around, and you know, some of these younger guys haven't had a chance to meet him, but I think that's going to make a huge difference on defense. So I'm thinking, look, realistically, this is a 10-6 team that I think makes the playoffs.
Yeah, but you can see why Las Vegas thinks 8-8, can't you?
Because if you look at all the losses and the negatives.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the losses of the premier players with Bennett, Sherman, Averill, the questions about Earl, what's going to happen there with him. You got McDougal taking over for Chancellor, Chancellor being another guy that's not going to be there. So defensively, yeah. And then who's going to be the where are you going to get the pass rush? Now, Frank Clark, you hope Deion Jordan, you hope Mingo. So that's kind of one of those things that you're hoping is going to come through, like we talked about with the Mariners, where you hope things. Because usually with the Seahawks, we don't hope that these things are going to happen. We expect them to happen. And then offensively, you got the two new coaches over there, the new coordinator, the new offensive line coach, the same offensive line, basically, except for Fluker. And maybe the change in philosophy is going to help. Rashad Penny coming in, the running game, we all anticipate it's going to be better, partly because it can't be worse. And then, but the receivers. I'm not so sure about the receivers either. You got Baldwin, but who's going to be your number two guy? So I can see why they're saying 8-8. But I always, it's just like with Tom Brady in New England. You know, give him 21 other guys, and give Russell Wilson 21 other guys, and you're going to have a playoff contender as long as Wilson's your quarterback.
I think this comes down to whether you believe Pete Carroll can build it again. I really think that that's as you're right. They've suffered a lot of losses. They've got five Pro Bowlers who are not coming back that we know of, and we've got a sixth in Earl Thomas, who right now I don't think you can bank on him playing in week one. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen between now and then. You can understand why people are looking at this team and thinking they won't do it. But do you believe that Pete Carroll won't be able to build it again? Like, is that... It comes down to sort of a faith in him. And Dave, you talk about how he is with younger players. Think about this team in 2011. They were 7-9 that year. They got better as the season went on. They didn't have a quarterback. Tavares Jackson was a starter, and he was okay, but he wasn't able to win games or make plays in the fourth quarter. They didn't have anyone who was as good or as accomplished as Bobby Wagner on the defense. And they were a competitive, good team. And look at it. You've got a Pro Bowl quarterback in Russell Wilson. You've got a couple of, I mean, Bobby Wagner's going to be there, and K.J. Wright's going to be there. And, yeah, there's some uncertainty about pass rush, but they've built this defense before. Do we really think that they're not going to be able to build it again? And I guess I'm surprised at the amount of uncertainty that people have.
Well, Danny, part of it, sorry to interrupt you, but part of it, I think, is that it seems like a transition year, though. I don't question that Pete Carroll can rebuild this, but I see it maybe happening more in 2019 and not 2018.
But who have they got this year that it's going to need time to add, or are the guys just not here yet? I think that we've got a couple years of drafts about players we don't really know about. Anybody that tells you Tedrick Thompson's not going to be able to play, they don't know that. And Delano Hill, like he might be in the very same situation that Cam Chancellor was, where Cam didn't play as a rookie because he was behind Lawyer Malloy. In his second year, he comes in and emerges right away. There's a lot of guys on this team that you don't know about. And I think given the track record of both Pete Carroll and how he plays younger players, but also the front office and the guys that they've drafted, I think there's some talent here that is going to emerge. And if you ask me what I think is most likely, I think it's more likely that they're way better than expected than them being in some sort of rebuilding year where they're not competitive and finish 5-11.
Yeah, and who develops defensive backs the best? Pete Carroll and Pete Carroll's defense, and now he's got Norton back. So I think, look, I'm not saying that they're going to go undefeated or this is going to be some, you know, team that's just a juggernaut, but I just think they're being vastly underrated because of the losses. You're right, Jim. You can expect, here's what you heard. If, let's say you're on the other side of the country, you see Bennett going, you see Sherman going, both those guys are talking noise on the way out about Pete Carroll. And, oh, I was reading books during his meetings and, you know, Sherman saying that it's tired and the message is worn out and everything. And, you know, you absolutely see that. You see that, you know, the offensive line is bad. But, you know, I just think you're going to see a lot out of this defense. The pass rush thing is definitely a concern. But, look, it's one of those things where players step up every time. One of the things I looked at was, you know, since 2012, so I always call this ABR after Bobby and Russell, because I know Pete's been here longer than that. But since that time, the lowest ranked offense that they had in total offense was 2013. And I think they were ranked number 18 overall. 2013, the year they won the Super Bowl, that's when the offense was ranked the worst over the last few years. They were, you know, and they've been in the top 15. So, and the running game is that's what is really going to get them there. And again, I just think when you ask too much out of Russell, it's not the best thing when he has really killer great stats. You know, it's better when you have a running game and you don't use him up.
It is Danny David Moore here. We'll have the professor at 4 o'clock. We've already heard from Mitch Haniger. We got the All-Star, the final vote with Gene Segura. We'll tell you about that at 5 o'clock. In fact, I think we're going to carry that live. But up next, it was a tough night at the office for Mike Leake last night. And Jerry DePoto kind of predicted why. We'll let you hear why next.
You're listening to Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
I was just telling these guys, this is the funniest thing that happened over the weekend. We'll get to Jerry DePoto and what he had to say about Mike Leake, and kind of might help you understand what's going on. My wife's been making water kefir. So it's like a probiotic drink. It's a naturally fermented soda, essentially. You've got these little cultures that you keep alive in water at room temperature, and they ferment, and then you mix in some fruit juice, and it's like a natural soda. It's kind of hippie-ish. Like, it leans toward that, but it's supposed to help your digestive health.
Sounds like moonshine.
Yeah, no.
There's fermentation?
Yeah, there is some fermentation involved, but I don't think it's an alcoholic drink. Over the weekend, there was a bottle she had forgotten to open to release the gases. And she opened it up. It was watermelon juice, fermented watermelon juice. And it basically all like rocketed out of the bottle and went directly onto her mom's head. I came back in. I was out of the condo at the time walking Peach, our dog. And I come back in and my father-in-law is like, we've got a big problem. And I look and it looks like a crime scene. Like there is watermelon juice all over. It's on the couch. It was so high on the wall. We've got 20-foot high ceilings in this new place we moved into that it was too tall for me to reach with an 8-foot ladder. Oh. There it was there.
And it went all the way up 20 feet?
Yeah, not to the ceiling, but it was like 14, 15, 16 feet up on the wall. Oh. Like it was massively and almost all of it. And my wife, who opened the bottle and who had forgotten to do it, like she had a little bit on her shirt. And it was just everywhere, and it landed directly on her mom.
And how'd she take it?
When I came back in, and it was one of those really sweet moments where you can tell they're all laughing hysterically. My wife is crying. Nobody's mad. Like, everybody thinks it's the funniest. And, like, my mother-in-law, she's like, I smell very good. Because it was all watermelon juice.
That had to have been sticky and
it was a huge
hard
mess.
To clean.
But everybody was laughing so hard as it came through. It was one of those sort of, like, moments where you talk about, hey, you know everything about them and you love them anyway, your family. Oh, it was, and they were so cute, like how hard they were laughing and thought it was funny. So anyway, that was the Chan family. We came up with it, the watermelon experience, the watermelon explosion. We're still not quite sure.
Have you tried the finished product?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it is good. We're thinking about starting a water kefir business. We're not sure of the name for it. Maybe Wake.
How about O'Chan's?
O'Chan's could be. That might be the parent company. Yeah, O'Chan's Natural Sodas. Mike Leake had a tough night at the office last night, which it might have rekindled Jim's thoughts that maybe he could hit off of Mike Leake. But as I was watching it, look, there's no way to – the Mariners get off to a 3-0 lead. Mitch Haniger homers in the first inning, and you're feeling really good about things. And it just did not go well from after that. The Mariners' offense sputtered, and he kept getting hit. But one of the things that I thought of was we've talked a lot about Seattle's ability to find value in starting pitching by getting guys who are not big velocity. They don't strike out. Mike Leake is not a guy that's going to get a lot of strikeouts. And when those guys aren't on, it's going to look worse than it will with other pitchers. And I flash back Jerry DePoto, who's with us each Thursday. He said something about that. You'll hear him talking about both Mike Leake and Marco Gonzalez here about when it goes bad, it can look worse than it will with other pitchers.
One thing I do trust, and we've talked about it a lot, is I trust athletes, and I trust athletes with a competitive string, guys who love to get out there and dig in. And I think that's the best way to describe both Mike and Marco is that they're both excellent athletes. Both were two-way players in college. Both guys do all the little things that are required. They bring strikes, they move the ball around, and they have a sense for pitching. And on a given day, because they're not going to overwhelm you with velocity, you know, their bad day might be a little louder than a normal guy's bad day or a hard thrower's bad day. But the hard throwers have bad days too.
You know, I was looking at his six losses that he has, Mike Leake, this year. Three of them are against the Angels. So, I mean, that's somewhat, I guess, of a relief that maybe that team's got you figured out and their scouting report is pretty good on you. And same thing with Wade LeBlanc. Like, you know, I was looking at him, and when it goes wrong, like Jerry said, it goes bad. That was pretty depressing last night, you know, 11 hits, and especially on the heels of seeing Gene Segura with the T-shirts and everybody. And then Andrelton Simmons comes out and has a really good game. But, yeah, I just think that that's probably going to happen from time to time. And also, I guess I'm somewhat confident, and maybe that's not the case. But again, three of his six losses against the Angels. So maybe that's something that they've got figured out, and maybe it's only exclusive to that team. That's what I'm hoping anyway.
Yeah, 20 hits in eight innings, the last two starts against the Angels for Mike Leake. But, yeah, for the most part, he's been so good, though. So, I mean, whatever it was a couple months ago when I thought he was terrible, and then he goes on that streak where he has eight starts in a row where he went six or seven innings in all of them, even eight, and only gave up two runs or one run. And so, and I thought when he was the only guy to win at Boston, I thought, man, Mike Leake at Fenway Park, this might not go well. And so, yeah, he had a bad night. I have a hard time criticizing him right now, though, because he's been so good for the most part this year, and he's really a third or a fourth starter, and so for what he is, he's all right.
This also explains some of the Mariners' run differential. We've kind of scratched our heads all year about it, along with all the baseball, and trying to decide, are they just lucky in winning this many one-run games? I think there's also a sense that, was it the saying about the girl with the curl? When she's good, she's very, very good, but when she's bad, she's awful. There's kind of that. When it goes wrong for them, because they don't have a staff other than James Paxton with big overpowering velocity, it's going to look worse, and that you're going to have more ugly losses maybe, but the ugly loss only counts for one loss in the standings.
I like the girl with the curl reference there, Danny.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, and I think it's apropos.
Really?
Yeah.
You're buying what I'm selling?
I am buying what you're selling.
Because I thought I was partly talking out of my hind parts about trying to polish it up and
explain.
That's an old-time
saying there. But no, last night's game, you really, like you said, you get that three-run lead, you hand it over to Leake, and you go, well, okay, go out and pitch to contact, and he did that. I read Divish's story this morning. StatCast had a bunch of balls that were hit. They were screamers. I mean, there was a lot of contact.
There wasn't many cheap hits.
But no, there were. And then with Garrett Richards coming out, you're going, well, okay, this is setting up pretty well. I think maybe you led 3-1 at the time, or even if you were down 5-3, you had a chance to come back against these LA relievers, and they had five of them, six and a third innings, and no earned runs. So, yeah, it was just a tough night. We'll see how it goes tonight with Marco.
I think that Ramirez reliever, the first guy that came in to relieve Richards, I like the way he throws. Noe Ramirez, I was pretty impressed with that. We'll see. Game 2 of the series comes up tonight. It is Danny Davenport. We got the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next.